Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
All right, a special show today, as we always have. My sidekick, Amanda Holmes, going to interview Martin Attell. He's the CEO and founder of VoteBash.com, a new space of engagement and emerging global digital media marketing research platform. That's a mouthful. That provides brands, businesses, and organizations real-time feedback. Let me send it over to Amanda Holmes.
And thank you so much, Alan. We have today, I'm so thrilled to have Martin Attell, who is the founder and CEO of VoteBash. Now, the reason why every entrepreneur is sitting at the edge of their seat right now is because everybody wants to know, how do you go from zero to 65 million in 5 weeks? That's pretty phenomenal. Everybody that I've talked to has been quite thrilled. And the first question is, what do they do? So, Martin, can you tell us a little bit, what is VoteBash?
Sure. VoteBash is a new space of engagement where people vote their opinion, and we help brands and organizations get a real-time feedback for their decision-making processes. Could be they need to do a new marketing campaign, or they want to find out what the next best product is. You can do that on VoteBash. And when people vote on VoteBash, they get rewarded for their opinions with a deal or a discount. And whenever that happens, then everyone wins, because the voter, the consumer, gets a reward, and the retailers or the organizations, they will get the data in the background, and they will be able to find out what is next and where the customers actually are and what matters to them. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, it's a really great business model, and we make money when the consumers really redeem those rewards and go to a point of sale, and then we get a commission.
So my understanding from what you've told me is that typically, Fortune 500 companies obviously do focus groups, and they'll spend $250,000, even $1 million to get 8 to 10 people in a room to just get feedback about what they're doing with their marketing, what they're doing with their product, and that's a very expensive commodity. So what you've been able to do is take that process, which takes so much time. They're even analyzing data that has been 6 months old, which today you can't do. So to be able to give them real-time data, you now have brought that process online so that you can send out an email and say, hey, I'd like some feedback. They can then give that feedback in exchange for a discount or a coupon, and they can share it with their friends, so it can become viral as opposed to just getting 8 to 10 people's feedback. You get real-time feedback. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's really on point. And from that moment on, we also thought about how can we further improve this process by bringing the marketing world and the research world together. Mm. Now you actually have brand ambassadors and advocates promoting the brand with a button on VoteBash, showing it to their friends and family, what this brand is doing, what new campaigns are coming out. So that's the exciting part of VoteBash.
Very interesting. So your background, you weren't in this at all. You were at BMW. How did that, tell me about that.
Yeah. So after I studied electrical engineering, and
electrical engineering.
And computer science, I got the opportunity to work for BMW, and I actually did my thesis over there, and went into the role of doing process development with a group over there. So it was a really interesting place to be in Germany. And as I progressed through various roles over there in that organization, I was able to get an assignment overseas in the United States.
Oh, okay.
And that was in the year 2008, where the elections were very, very phenomenal, where President Obama got elected, and where I think the first time we saw in the United States a really grassroots movement that was organized through social media and other platforms. And I thought, hey, this is great. Why can you not do that for brands? Why can you not do that movement and that grassroots forward thinking for brands and organizations? So I start playing with that in my mind, and then we moved forward, and I got with this idea, and that's how VoteBash was born in the first place.
Wow, so fascinating. And I gotta hand it to you. So you came from Holland, right? just said, I'm going to figure out how to grow this new thing that had never been developed before. Congratulations. It's only the tip of the iceberg, which, you know, when I heard the numbers, when I heard about you, I thought, wow, could it get any bigger than that? And now that I've talked to you, I've realized it can grow so much more. So in this next segment, what we're going to cover is, how did you do it? Everybody wants to know, how do you land a $65 million contract? So hold on. Here we come.
I'm Alan Taylor. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
And Amanda Holmes doing a great job. Amanda Holmes, Chet Holmes International. She's the CEO. And she's talking with Martin Attell. Back to you.
All right, and we are back with Martin Attell, CEO and founder of Vote Bash. So what everybody's been wanting to know, all of the entrepreneurs listening out there, how exactly do you land a $67 million contract? Can you talk a little bit about where were you at before that happened?
Yes. I think every entrepreneur comes in a specific moment where it's hard to figure out what you want to do with the business. So we just had product market fit. We're trying to find customers and consumers. And that's where I realized, you know, I need some help and I need some guidance. And that's where I reached out to Chet Holmes Group, reached out to Deborah Bringelson, who did a deal with Virgin, with Richard Branson, and with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And we were sitting together and said, okay, what is it what we could do to make Vote Bash work? And one of the things that were really epiphany for us is we found out that a lot of the things that I wanted to do and I thought I could not were actually possible. So I was actually blocking myself, if you will.
Wait. So it was in your head. It was something that you thought was not possible, which many people, I think, listening to this would think, I can't close a $65 million deal this year.
Yes. I think if you are an entrepreneur, congrats to you. You really have done a great decision. But a lot of entrepreneurs, like myself, in the beginning, they think they are not worth it. And that's part of society. Society tells you that you're not allowed to get success. And even if you do, then there are always people in the background telling you that you are not great. And I have experienced that many times. So actually that built it up in my head and I was able to block myself. And through certain topics and exercises, I was actually able to unblock myself and I was able to focus on what matters most, to get this deal.
Well, I find this really interesting. What Deborah told me, and you told me as well, is that you actually spent the time every morning to do a meditation.
Yes, yes. I did that together with my wife, and we did the five secrets. So we tried to align our feelings, our core beliefs. We tried to align all the creativity and everything that comes together at one point, and then that's where I always start my day. So I'm always happy.
So you're telling me that setting an intention and being clear on your core values can actually assist you to attract success?
Yes, because you still have to do the work, but a lot of things that really bring the extra mile is in things like how do you feel, how do you come over, how do you talk to people. And a lot of people don't understand that business is still, you know, human business. People don't buy from companies, they buy from people. So you have to understand that the way you come across, the way you work with people is something that you can influence. And if you can set the motion, if you can set the mindset for that in the beginning of your day, then it could be twice as successful as you normally would.
Oh my gosh. So you're telling me that while you were going through Chet Holmes' group coaching method, you found that just having that positive frame, you started your day in a positive place, and getting that coaching to break through those barriers that you had in your own head, nothing was holding you back but what was in your own head, to then reach out to your network, and in that 5 weeks, what do you think was the thing that really landed them? You said that it was people, but give me the very specific. Did you guys relate on something in life? What landed that deal?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is really understanding your customer. trying to figure out who they are. But then at a core level, you have to know where they want to be, what their pains are, what they are struggling with. And one of the things that I want to point out here, what I learned in the group coaching, is that it was very specific what we had to write down about each of our core customer personas, what they are basically struggling with. And the things that they are struggling with was not, oh, I need to become the number one in my company. It's more or less like, oh, can my children go to college? Mm-hmm. Can I pay for college? Can I do these kind of things? And you're trying to get to the soft parts, and you're trying to understand what a human being is at its core, and then you can connect with them.
Wait, so you're saying that our prospects are real people?
Yes, they are, always.
And they have struggles just like we have struggles.
Yes.
So if you can connect on that similar ground, it's easier to win a deal.
It's easier to win a deal. It's easier to connect with people, and it's easier to retain customers.
Mm. Well, beautiful. I think that wraps up our second segment here. And in the third segment, we're going to cover a little bit more about Martin and what's the future of Vote Bash and what entrepreneurs can learn from closing $65 million.
We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
And Amanda Holmes doing a great job. Amanda Holmes, Chet Holmes International, she's the CEO. And she's talking with Martin Attell. Martin is the CEO and founder of VoteBash.com. VoteBash.com. Back with you, Amanda.
And we are back with Martin Attell, founder and CEO of VoteBash. Martin, so I find this so fascinating how you've been able to completely shift this paradigm of what it means for a business owner to see value in real-time feedback. Can you give us a tactical example of how getting feedback from your clients can assist with generating more business or helping with marketing? Do you have any key examples of this?
Yes, we're testing with a couple of projects, and we had one customer that was able to verify in certain geographical areas. This organization had an assumption of a certain geographical area where they wanted to be in, and found out that the picture of the demographics were completely different.
Wow, like what? Like they were male instead of female, or age graphics?
Actually, what they were thinking and feeling, because people wanted to decide if they wanted to have a presence there, so if they wanted to build a store there. So they found out that it was really in a different area, and they were able to make savings because of that. And they were also able to adjust their marketing because of that. So these are just the things that you can do. It's just scratching the surface of finding out what the customers really want.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's got to be $1 million save or more, depending on what kind of a business that is. If you're going to build a whole location somewhere, it'd be nice to know the market data beforehand. That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. So what is the future of Vote Bash? Where will we see you? What's the plan? Did you plan last year that you would get to where you are now? Let's start with that question, because I'm curious. Did you have that plan?
Well, this is a small story. When I was 10 years old, my father wanted me to write down my future planning. Unfortunately, my father passed away last year, but I still remember that day where I had to write down what I needed to do. And one of the things that I said, I would have my studies done, I would work in Germany for BMW.
Hey, at 10.
And I would go to the United States. And I told my father that, I told my mother that, and I had to sign it. And every time when I wasn't really aligning myself with my core vision, my parents pulled out the paper and said, hey, you said you would do this, and we want to see some commitment.
That's how I got there.
So there was some planning with it, but it was more from the parents' house. But yes, of course, you do set certain milestones, but you would never find out where you're going to be or how you will end up. It's more or less like sculpturing or like doing a painting. You have an idea where you want to go, but in the end, it will be nice, but probably not what you have thought of in the first place.
And I just do have to give you those accolades. Last year, you won the Red Herring Award for 2017. You also, what was it with Entrepreneur? What was that?
Yeah, I was really stunned by that. I got selected for the Entrepreneur 360 list, one of the top companies that was innovative and entrepreneurial in the US. And I was very humbled by that.
Ah, that's beautiful. Well, I'm glad we got a bigger segment from that. Very interesting. So now let's go to where is the future for you, knowing what you've been able to achieve last year. That's pretty phenomenal.
I think what you will see is that we're going to move to mobile a lot because we're a website and we are working on a mobile app. Mm. And we're going to present a family of mobile apps. And then what you will see is that we are going to emerge in different areas of commerce. Right now we are very strong focused on retail, and you will also see us in some political realms as well.
Oh, interesting. And for those of you that aren't on mobile, I would highly recommend it, considering that on average today, consumers are on mobile 5 hours a day. 42% of that time is on social media. So if you're not there, that's where your consumers are. So congratulations for being there. Why don't we wrap this up with the last final, what would you give as advice to entrepreneurs out there hearing this, hearing your story?
What you don't know about me is that I survived in the jungle, in the Amazon jungle, as a ritual to become a man in my culture. So I did that when I was 18 years old. And I'm not going to go through the whole story, but I will tell you three life lessons that I give everyone. Mm. Number one, you focus. Because if you don't focus, you die in the jungle.
Like pig-headed discipline and determination?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And you have to pivot, always. Don't be afraid to pivot and move away from your idea. And never give up. And in the core of that, you always have the discipline to do whatever you don't want to do in your business, because that's how you become successful. Mm-hmm. And you always have the determination. That's what I would give you.
Beautiful. Well, it aligns very well with Chet Holmes International and our New York Times bestseller, Ultimate Sales Machine. You have to have. If you fail a business, it's because you gave up. That one single token is pig-headed discipline and determination. So thank you so much, Martin. It's been such a pleasure. I've learned so much. And I think everybody can learn out there that sky is really the limit. If you just are clear on your core values, if you're clear on where you want to go, then the opportunities are endless.
Clear your head and be the best authentic self you can be.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure's mine.
Martin was ranked number 29 in the 2017 Entrepreneur Magazine's 360. He has won a spot in the Dublin Tech Summit 2017 Startup 100 program, Red Herring Top 100 North America Award, the Red Herring Top 100 Global Award, the Collision Alpha 2016 listing, the Collision Pitch Top Startup 2016, and the 2016 Web Summit Beta listing. The man just has something good going on. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Discover unstoppable industry influencers who celebrate disruptive thinking and game-changing business strategies on Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Once again with Amanda Holmes, doing a fantastic job doing some on-the-street reporting. Right now with Garrett Gunderson. He's the founder of the Wealth Factory. Wealth Factory empowers its members to build sustainable wealth through financial efficiency and organization, leading to clarity. Clarity, peace of mind, and financial confidence. All right, take it away, Amanda.
Thank you so much, Alan. And I am here with Garrett Gunderson, who is the founder of Wealth Factory. We're at a Wealth Factory workshop, and I just had to grab him in here because his information about how to sustain wealth, how to grow wealth, there are so many myths that can be busted, and we're going to shatter them in this next segment. Just so you know, he has a New York Times best-selling book, Killing Sacred Cows, Overcoming the Financial Myths That Are Destroying Your Prosperity. He's an SBA Young Entrepreneur of the Year, and so glad to have you here, Garrett.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
Yes. So what we're going to cover right now are the 3 biggest tax myths that every entrepreneur should know. Please tell me.
All right, first one's simple but profound. There's a difference between average rates and marginal rates. So average, let's just say you made 100 grand, pay 17%, that's 17,000 in tax. But the first dollars you make, you're taxed at a lower rate than that 17%, they're taxed at 10%. Then you get a different corridor where you get taxed at 20%, then it goes up. So there's 6 different marginal rates. So when you save tax, you save it off the highest tax rate, not your lowest. And when you make more money, it doesn't go back retroactively and increase your tax on your previous dollars. So I grew up in a town where people thought if you work too much, you get in a higher bracket and everything gets taxed higher. Nope, only the last dollars. So it always preserves your first dollars at lower rates. It's called the marginal rate. So that's the first myth. You can always make more money and still keep more if you make more. Even if you pay more to the government, there's still more going to your pocket because it never comes back and takes the other dollars.
Wow, that is fascinating. And I definitely relate to this whole mentality of not having enough. And you talk a lot about this, the scarcity mentality of looking at your finances over a long term as opposed to a short term play.
I always say in tax, like the greatest tax shelter, go earn another buck. I mean, go earn more money. Production-based thinking always trumps reductionist thinking because no one ever shrinks their way to wealth. So you want to never overpay taxes, but at the same time, when you earn more money, it never taxes your previous dollars more.
Wow, that's good. That's really good. Okay, what about number 2?
All right, the second thing is, I'm sure every entrepreneur has heard this before from their accountant, is you hear about conservative accountants. Like, oh, I'm going to make sure you don't get audited. Number one, the IRS, they intend to audit at least every entrepreneur one time during their lifetime.
Wow.
So when an accountant says conservative, that's kind of a myth. Usually it means they're antiquated. It means that you're overpaying taxes. I believe you should do everything legally and ethically to save at every possible angle. So I hear all the time people are like, well, my accountant says I can't take a home office deduction. Why not? You definitely can. Or they don't know about the Augusta rule where you can write off your home 14 days a year for using it for your business and not have to pay taxes on the personal income, but you get the tax deduction in the business. Or you can pay your kids up to $12,000 a year. These are all deductions that are available that I see accountants all the time miss or say, oh, you can't take it, but you actually can. That conservative nature is more of them admitting ahead of time that they're missing things so they don't get fired.
Wow, so I hope you're writing these things down, and if you want more, you can just go to wealthfactory.com to learn more. You have a bunch of great material there.
Yep.
Can you give an example of somebody that maybe made, what are you looking at here, where they got audited and then they actually made a good return? Do you have any good success stories?
So there's this guy, Mike Gandolfi.
Okay.
And so Mike, number one, told me he didn't need to meet with our accountants because he had the best accountant in the world.
Okay.
Number two, he wasn't even incorporated, which is a problem because if you're a business owner and you're not incorporated, not only do you have unlimited liability, you also are going to overpay your taxes because the type of corporation you choose has a big impact on your taxation. So we made him an S corporation, made him take a reasonable salary, took the rest in distributions. Those distributions were saving him 15.3% in tax. So that was a pretty big deal. The second thing is he owned his own building. So he did cost segregation. That saved him another $10,000 a year. So now we're at $20,000 a year. Plus we went back 3 years and amended his returns for things that he didn't take that he could have taken. And so that saved him $102,000. Now 4.5 years later, he gets audited. And he calls me and he's like, dude, I'm going to jail. I'm like, nah, that's not a big surprise, man. He's like, no, I got this letter from the IRS. I'm like, dude, don't even worry about it. It's well documented. Everything's well within the law. It's not going to be a big deal. He's like, I'm scared. I'm like, A, don't even go. B, what if we save you tax? I think you owe me a Bears game because we're mutual Bears fans, but for punishment. And it turned out we saved him $5,500 by writing off his vehicle more because we did take less than we could, by writing off things that he was buying that could help his business as a health professional that weren't being written off that then came about. And so it was $5,500 more in his pocket during the audit.
Oh, fascinating. Well, give me that third one. What is that third biggest tax myth that every entrepreneur should know?
They'll think, oh, I'm good. I've got a good CPA. And you may have a good CPA, but you're going to want to have an attorney. So if you're making millions, you want a tax attorney. If you haven't made your first million yet, you probably want just a corporate attorney. But the type of corporation you choose can help you reclassify income. The more you can move active income to passive income or ordinary income to capital gains, you'll keep more money in your pocket. So if you have an LLC but you don't have a business partner, you're probably overpaying tax. If you have an S corporation but you're taking all of your income through salary, you're probably overpaying tax. If you have a business or a side of your business doing less than $50,000 and you're not using a C corporation, you're probably overpaying tax. That's a big deal. I mean, there's so many opportunities out there, and most people have that myth of it's just too complicated, or I just hand it to my accountant. You've got to take personal responsibility, meet with with them at least on a quarterly basis and have a different set of eyes on your accounting at least every quarter. And by adding that attorney, you're going to add a lot more money to your bottom line by giving the government less and keeping more in your pocket.
Well, I know everybody that's listening to this right now is going to replay it maybe like 4 or 5 times because there was so much great value that you just gave there. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you do at Wealth Factory?
Yeah, we help people achieve economic independence. We feel like you don't get a second chance to live a life that you love and create a legacy that lasts. And so we're here not just to help people move money from generation to generation tax-free, but be so deliberate that they can create economic independence within 3 to 7 years with proven frameworks, bringing in a financial team that gives them a second opinion on everything they do so they get that financial house in order, show them how to keep more of what they make without painful budgeting, and then start to scale their business because that's one of their greatest assets. And a lot of times they rob money from the business in the name of financial plans like retirement plans that aren't helping them with cash flow, that lock their money away, that are actually making their taxes worse sometime in the future. So we're here to put more money into their life rather than take money from it.
Amazing. So I highly recommend wealthfactory.com. Any good resources that people would want to take away there, they should go to your YouTube. How do you find your YouTube?
Yeah, that's a good question. But if they go to wealthfactory.com/podcast, we have a myriad of resources, including my books, like What Would the Rockefellers Do, Killing Sacred Cows, The Cash Flow Guide for Entrepreneurs. Like, we just bombard them with value, so hopefully they end up loving us and they can become one of the million people we help liberate to economic independence.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much, Garrett. This has been so valuable.
Thanks so much.
This is Entrepreneur Weekly. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
And Amanda Holmes having a nice talk with Nick Onken. Nick is a photographer, podcast host, and an entrepreneur. Nick started out in design, but his path changed as he pursued other interests, including photography and travel. Nick boasts a client list of top name brand companies, including Walmart, Coca-Cola, Nike, Reebok, Time Warner, and others. He's author of a travel photography book, Photo Trekking, and speaks at different professional organizations and events across the country. And here's Amanda Holmes having a nice conversation. We appreciate Amanda Holmes. She is the president, CEO of Chet Holmes International and my sidekick. Great job, Amanda. Back to you.
Thank you so much, Alan. We have here Nick Onken. He is a renowned photographer over a decade working with clients like Justin Bieber and Usher and Nike and Reebok. And he's come here today to teach all of us the 3 ways to build a visually appealing personal brand that sells. Nick, such a pleasure to have you on the call.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to look up some of his photographs while we're on, you can go to Instagram at Nick Onken, O-N-K-E-N, or even your podcast, which is Neon Radio, right?
Yeah,
N-I-O-N Radio.
Yes, you got it. Neon Radio.
So you've done something that majority of photographers or hobbyists only dream, something that everybody loves to do but can't really make a living at it. What was the difference that made you become a true entrepreneur instead of just a hobbyist?
That's a great question, and there's a lot of things, but I think the first thing is really like understanding that world and understanding that world is out there, that you can make money as a photographer. And, you know, for me, one of the biggest things is like working for another photographer when I first started, and he opened my eyes to that possibility, because I didn't even know that was a possibility. But, you know, as with anything that I've learned over the last few years is in entrepreneurship, is that you've got to be creative in business. So especially in photography, there's different venues, different avenues, and you have to create a business around each one. They're each a different type of business, whether, you know, someone's shooting weddings or commercial photography or portraits or anything like that. There's different business models that you can create around each one. So I've dabbled in a few different ones, and commercial photography's been the main one. And I've also been doing entrepreneurs and personal branding for them, as well as some other things.
Well, you've definitely made yourself known for that. I love your photography and what you've done with some people like a Lewis Howes or a Pencils of Promise. And let's just dive right in. I want to know, for all those people out there trying to figure out how to get their message across and create fans, not just customers or someone that looks at your brand and then leaves. So what would be the first step to creating that visual appeal?
Yeah, I would say the first step is actually knowing your vision and mission so that you can tell the story around that. Because if you don't know that, you're not going to be able to build it in visually. So knowing and understanding the vision of your brand and your message that you want to convey is huge. It's the key piece to starting out. And a good example of that is actually Pencils of Promise. I met Adam Braun, the founder. God, it was probably 10 years ago. And him and I just connected over a beer. And when he told, he's an amazing storyteller. And his vision and mission was so clear when I met him. I knew, like, I understood it. And I knew that I could really help tell a story around that, you know, bringing education to the children in the developing world, which at the time that I met him was primarily Laos. And so him and I ended up going to Laos for 6 days. An amazing trip. We were like traveling through jungles and on motorcycles and boats and visiting the schools and really hanging out and being with those kids and photographing the kids. But for something that really aligned with me was bringing the joy out of the kids that the organization was helping. And that was a big part of their mission, was not just to show sad kids, you know, deprived kids. It was to show the joy in the kids and the gratitude that they had from the help that Pencils of Promise was bringing them, the education that Pencils of Promise was giving them. So we were able to build them a really big library of images that they've used even to today to help convey and communicate that message, to get donors on board to help them out and to donate money to them.
Yeah, and that's even harder. I know from working in a nonprofit that getting people to donate is even harder than selling. So I know that those pictures were really important. And how many schools has Pencils of Promise built now?
Yeah, they're up over 400 in
wow.
over...
Wow, so millions of dollars.
Yeah,
millions of dollars
in three countries. Yeah, so now they're in Laos, wow. Ghana, and Guatemala. And I've been to all three countries multiple times since we started. So I know that the imagery has helped amplify and build their brand a lot faster than if they didn't have them.
Wow. So people really resonated with the mission and Adam's story about the pencil, right? He had that story about going, can you tell that story? Because I think it's good to get that very specific story down.
Yeah, you know, Adam was traveling the world and he was on the semester at sea boat that got hit by a 60-foot rogue wave and almost capsized. Like, they all thought they were going to die. They were in their life jackets.
Whoa.
And that was a life-changing moment for him. And so after that moment, he decided that he had to use whatever he knew and his knowledge and passion to change the world. And when he was traveling through India, he met a kid, and just the street kid, and asked him, you know, if he could have anything in the world, what would that be? And, you know, he was thinking, oh, well, like, you know, Nintendo or something like that. And the kid answered him, a pencil. And,
wow.
You know, in the representation of education, because that was that's obviously something that they don't have access to. So,
wow, that's perfect. Well, I'm going to cut you off right here because we have a commercial break. But next up, we're going to hear the three things we need to create a visually appealing brand that sells.
This is Entrepreneur Weekly. We'll be right back.
There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Amanda Holmes doing a fantastic job talking with Nick Onken. You can find her at Chet Holmes International, chetholmesinternational.com. And back to you, Amanda.
And we're back with Nick Onken, and he is teaching us the three ways to create a visually appealing personal brand that sells from a true expert. So you said that first one was really creating a mission, a vision that you as a person resonate with so that others can resonate and come to you as well, like Pencils of Promise. So you worked with them. They've raised millions of dollars by donation because of the pictures that you captured.
Absolutely. Yeah. And knowing and understanding that so that you can use the vision and mission to tell your brand story.
So what would be our second step?
So the second step is to kind of start, now that you know the vision and the mission and the story, now think of like the visual cues that would represent that, from your wardrobe to the locations, to the props, to maybe activities, different things that exemplify who you are personally. Now we're going to translate that to your own personal brand. This is a lot of stuff that I'm taking and learning from the big brands that I've shot with and the big celebrities that I've shot with. Everybody that I've worked with knows who they are personally. So visual cubes, like what kind of wardrobe? Are you really, really professional? Do you need to be shown wearing a suit? Or are you a little bit more business casual, you know? Or are you in a home entrepreneur where you don't have to have either? Or are you a fitness person where it's more about fitness wear? You know, things like that. You know, what is it that you want, the aspirational aspect that you want to tell? And, you know, different locations also. It's like, do you want to shoot outside in a park? Do you need greenery? Do you need a beach? Do you need to be in a studio? Is your brand about being sleek and clean with hard artificial light in a studio? That's also another thing. So a good example of this is Lewis Howes. I'm sure a lot of people might have heard of him.
Yeah, I think he's gotten to about 6 million downloads on his podcast, School of Greatness. So what did you do with Lewis?
So Lewis's story and his vision and mission is all about greatness, you know, taking people to be the best and the greatest that they are and can be. And for him, it was about creating aspirational imagery. And he, you know, he asked me, he's like, what's the next thing that we can do that's like even more epic and create that grand feeling? And I was like, well, we need to like shoot on an epic location. So he's like, well, what's an epic location? I was like, Iceland is an epic location. It's just like the landscapes are so vast and so surreal and you feel like you're on another planet. It's epic. So if we, you know, photograph you in these epic landscapes, it's going to give people that aspirational feeling of greatness. And so that's what we did. We flew out, you know, he hired me to fly out to Iceland and we shot for a couple of days. We took a helicopter out and we shot it with a helicopter in the background and this like epic mountain location. So it really did give this feeling of greatness, which is his brand. So
I love it. You giving steps. It makes it a little bit easier when people are sitting there going, what does my marketing look like? How do I take all of these photos? Because photos are so important on social media today, on your website today, even in ads. It's so important. So what's that next step? I love that you're giving me these in steps.
So once you kind of have that under, you know, all those things thought about, you know, you can even write those down, create a document that, and even pull together a Pinterest board to pull some of that stuff together as you think about it. And then the third step would be, you know, when hiring a photographer, you want to really look at their portfolio so that you know what you're going to get. And that's like huge. That's the way branding and advertising agencies work. It's how it gets done is photographers have a specific style. And it could be from like natural carefree moments to like vibrant colors to sleek studio or to even darker, you know, a darker, moodier look. So when you're looking for a photographer, you want to look for somebody whose style resonates with you. I think, you know, the thing to look for really is, can that photographer deliver the essence of what you want your brand to convey? I think, you know, in the era of personal branding, I think it's also important that if a photographer has a personal brand, that shows you that they understand what it's like on the other side of the camera in multiple ways. But I think the biggest thing is that they understand how to build a personal brand and can help you do that as well.
This is great. From all the photos that I've taken over the years, it really helps me to hear you take these step by step so that when us entrepreneurs that are making really, I mean, maybe we're great at being a chef or really great at being a chiropractor or a sales expert, but we're not experts at taking photos. So it's so great to have your three steps to a visually appealing brand that can sell. Thank you so much, Nick. If you want to follow his story, go to nickonken.com or Instagram at nickonken, O-N-K-E-N. Check out his podcast, Neon Radio. That's N-I-O-N Radio. Thank you so much, Nick.
And that's about it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Make sure you check out our podcast for more at entrepreneur.com. I'm Alan Taylor, and a big thanks to Amanda Holmes. We'll see you next week.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.